Something that we haven't really talked about, two things, is while they're having the treatment and then when they're finished treatment. So could you take us through what somebody who's having treatment at the moment is, their journey that they're on?
Okay, so I mean, treatment for cancers is changing all the time, and I think this is one of the most fantastic things, that there's so much research going into it, and all the treatment is monitored. So for example, the radiotherapy that I had, if I'd had cancer 20 years before, I'd have had a lot more radiotherapy. The surgery that I'd had, if I'd had it 30 or 40 years before, I'd have had a massively bigger operation. So all the time things are improving, and the aim is always to reduce the amount of treatment to a minimum without having any effect on the benefit.
Right.
So obviously you don't want to reduce it so much that the cancer starts coming back, but you want to reduce it enough that side effects are limited, because the problem with most cancer treatments are there are big side effects, and it is obviously just a balance. So the standard treatment for breast cancer, first of all, you have to make a very accurate diagnosis, because there's different stages of the actual tumour itself, and this really tells you how advanced the cancer is. So there's grade zero is kind of like a pre-cancer state, where it's heading towards cancer but not there. And this is by looking at the cells under the microscope, and it kind of goes grade 1, 2, 3, and when you get to grade 3, it's very aggressive cancer. And then there's the stages, which says whether the cancer has stayed within the breast, whether or whatever part of the body, if it's not breast cancer, and whether it's gone to the lymph nodes, which are like the local parts of the body which are our defences and stop cancer spreading, or if it's gone much further afield to other parts of the body.
Yeah.
And so depending on that staging and the grading, we'll decide what treatment you need. The minimum that you usually need is to have the cancer lump itself removed for breast cancer. Sometimes you can get away with just removing the lump, sometimes you have to remove the whole breast.
You mentioned something like that, where you was given a choice. I read something.
Yes.
And they were expecting you to make a decision, and you was like, yeah, tell us a bit about that experience.
Okay. Yes, okay. So this, when I'm, sometimes I, as you say, Tracy, it's not, sometimes it's absolutely definite. There are some sorts of cancers that spread so much that say, sorry, you've got to have the whole breast off regardless.
Mm.
But in my case, I could have had just the lump out, or I could have had the whole breast removed. And there were various different operations. And if you have the whole breast removed, there are operations where they can replace the breast tissue with fat or other tissue, so that it looks, to all intents and purposes, like a normal breast. So you're not left just with a flat chest anymore, as was used to happen in the past. But the poor woman who was treating me, she'd been doing the clinic for about 5 hours that morning. She'd overrun. It was sort of, she was about to have to go off to theatre without any lunch. And I'm sure she'd explained things 1,000 times, and she just wasn't explaining it to me. And I guess also she probably thought I was a doctor and I understood everything, but she was asking me which operation I wanted. And I think part of the problem nowadays, which is a two-edged sword, is that as patients, we are now expected quite often to make our own decisions. And of course, in one way, that's fabulous.
Mm.
But it's a bit like having a plumber, and he comes along and says, you know, what sort of socket would you like me to use here? And like, well, I don't know, just stop water pouring all over my floor, you know. And it's getting the balance right between actually giving the person the benefit of the medical expertise whilst allowing them, obviously, to make some decisions about their own body as well. And I felt that I was being asked to make a decision without all the information. And I kept trying to ask the doctor, well, you know, what do you mean by this? What is this operation and that? And she kept trying to explain, but I think she was just exhausted.
Mm.
Or maybe she just wasn't very good at explaining. I don't know. But I was getting more and more confused. And one minute she'd be sort of talking about one operation, then she'd be flipping to another. And I hadn't realised she'd changed. So the net result was that I was there having to make an extremely important decision, which would affect my whole life, on what sort of operation I was going to have. And I felt like, well, I might as well just toss a coin because I just didn't know what to do. And at one point I said to her, well, what would you do if it was you? And she meant it so well, but she said, yes, but it's not me. This has to be your decision. Mm. But it was, I just felt I was not, I didn't have the information. And, you know, it's hard. What do you do in these circumstances? Well, I think the important thing to remember, I mean, we all tend to think of cancer as a panic. You've got to have treatment today. You do actually have time. You do have time to think.
Oh, good. As an Archie guy.
Yeah, and I think that is so important. So, I mean, sometimes it's a very serious cancer and you don't have a lot of time, but you do have time to go away and even think 24 hours about
yes.
it.
Yes.
Ask other people, look it up on the internet and understand. I think the thing is, if we went out to buy a new car, we'd do all the research,
yeah.
you know, we'd know what the engine size was, what the performance was. And yet we're making big decisions about our health sometimes on very limited information. So I can't even remember what question you asked to start this, Tracy. I sort of waffled on.
It was about having treatment, just about getting us through the treatment.
Yes, so the first thing is there sometimes are choices. Because after surgery, whatever surgery you decide to have, and as I say, this is usually either a lump or have the whole breast removed with or without a reconstruction, and there's various different reconstructions. Nowadays, the plastic surgery skills are just amazing and they can do fantastic jobs. Usually they will have to remove your nipple because your nipple can be a source of cancer coming back. Although sometimes they can do things where they can remove everything except the surface, so you still have a normal nipple. But then they can use tattoos to actually tattoo on the nipple so it looks normal. So there's amazing things
wow.
they can do. Yes, and the results can be very good.
Because wasn't that one of the problems a long time ago, that women were worried about their femininity, sorry,
yeah.
I'm trying to get the word out,
yeah,
because
I think
of the fact of losing their breasts?
Well, this is it, because not only are you dealing with the fact that you might lose your life, but you're having an operation which, you know, it is something which is attacking everything feminine about you. I mean, your breast is a massive part of you. I mean, actually, even for old women like me, but even for, you know, for young women,
mm.
you know, you're starting out in life and you want to be attractive and you feel as if it's going to take all your attractiveness from you.
Mm.
And actually, some of the operations are so good that it doesn't do that. It doesn't have to do that. You can look good. Sometimes they can take fat tissue from your tummy and use that to replace the breast. And I was quite excited about that because, you know, I've got plenty to lose from my tummy. So I thought, well, this was a good move. But in the end, I didn't have that. I just had the lump removed. But then once you've had the surgery, what they will often want to do as well is to take one of the lymph nodes from under your arm.
Right.
And the reason is that is often where the cancer spreads first of all. And they do quite a clever thing where they inject a little bit of radioactive substance into your breast, and this will go to wherever the cancer would spread if it was going to spread. And it's, as I say, it's usually under your arm, sometimes other areas around your breast. And then using a sort of a radioactivity counter, they can find where it's gone, and it will have gone to one of the lymph nodes. So they take that out, and the idea is that if that's where the radioactivity went, if the cancer had spread, it would have gone there first.
Right.
So by having a look at just a few little lymph nodes, they can see whether it's spread outside your breast.
Oh, okay.
And if it has, then you will need more treatment. So you'll probably need chemotherapy.
Yes, right. So what's the difference between chemotherapy and then radiotherapy?
Yeah.
Is that something that some people probably don't
Yeah,
understand?
Some people need both. Some
yeah.
people need one or the other. If the cancer hasn't spread, there's a good chance that you will need to have the lump removed and you will need radiotherapy.
Right.
If it's spread, then you will need chemotherapy as well. That's very general. There's lots of nuances, but that's kind of general rules. Chemotherapy is basically just means drugs, but these are very, very powerful drugs. And the principle generally with chemotherapy is that it's a poison, effectively, and it will poison all your cells, but it will poison the cancer cells most. So it usually does make you feel pretty poorly, although nowadays there's lots of supportive treatment to reduce that. But it will kill the cancer cells, whereas the rest of your body recovers. So it is quite hard, but it's very important, and it can save life. So it's, you know, it's absolutely important if you do need it to have it. there are lots of new treatments coming up, and some of them are very interesting. There's a group of drugs called immunotherapies. One of the problems with cancer is that it fools our immune system. I don't think many people realise, but we all have cancer cells in our bodies every day.
I think a lot more people are learning that now.
Yes. But our immune system normally kills them, just as it kills any foreign bugs that, infections that are in our body. And the reason that sometimes the cancer gets through the immune system is because it almost puts a cloak over itself, like an invisibility cloak. So your immune system can't see it. And these new immunotherapy drugs are incredibly clever because they will take away that cloak from the cancer cell so that your own immune system sees it, recognises it as cancer and kills it. Now, these are used at the moment mainly for kidney cancer, melanoma, which is a skin cancer. But they are investigating it for all sorts of cancers, including breast cancer, and that is really exciting treatment for the future.
Oh, wow, okay.
So there's loads and loads of hope with all cancers, actually. Treatments are getting more and more sophisticated, more effective. But at the moment, breast cancer, it's mainly remove the lump and have radiotherapy to stop it coming back, plus or minus chemotherapy.
Now, with chemotherapy, people used to lose their hair.
Yes.
Now some people don't lose their hair.
Yes, it depends on the particular chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
Some drugs are more likely to make you lose your hair than others. So again, it's important to ask these questions because these are things that people worry about, but they don't always ask.
Yes.
And it may be that you're worrying about nothing. But if you do have a drug which is likely to make your hair fall out, there are things you can do. There's things called a cold cap, which is basically, it's like a swimming cap that you put on your head. And it's infused with very, very cold water. It's not particularly pleasant. It's like, you know, when you have an ice cream and it goes and gives you a headache. But what it does is it reduces the blood flow to your scalp, which means that less of the chemotherapy drug will go to your scalp. So while you're having it to the rest of your body, it won't go to your scalp. And so there's less chance of the hair falling out. It's not always 100% successful, but it can be very useful. There's also some very good sort of hair products nowadays. And there's a chap called Daniel Fields who works in central London near Harley Street. And there's him and other people. And they have developed products which will help your hair grow very quickly or prevent it falling out. Again, not 100% successful, but they can be very useful. Mm. So it's worth looking up Daniel Field. It's he's on the internet, and there's lots of places you can look at, you know, to investigate these things.
So what about with radiotherapy? What is radiotherapy, and what's some of the side effects with that?
So radiotherapy is basically beams of electromagnetic waves. They usually use gamma waves. Sometimes they use different ones, such as proton beams or electron waves. And it attacks the whole cell. So this is, you know, when people, like in Japan, had the atom bomb, they were basically exposed to very high doses of radio waves. In the Chernobyl disaster in Russia, people were exposed to that. And in high doses, radioactivity can be fatal. But if you give it in a very controlled way, because cancer cells are dividing faster than normal cells, or more actively than normal cells, rather, they tend to be very sensitive to radio waves, whereas the normal cells aren't. So again, it's similar to the idea of chemotherapy, that the cancer cells are more sensitive, so they will be killed, whereas the normal cells won't. And the other thing they do with radiotherapy is the beams always go in straight lines. So if you can imagine, if you direct beams all round something in a circle, the bit in the middle is going to get hit by every beam.
Mm.
But the other parts of the circle are only going to get hit by the beams that go directly through them. So they give you radiotherapy at lots of different angles. So it's concentrated on the tumour, but actually the rest of your body gets much lower dose. So again, it's all aimed at attacking the cancer mainly, but not the rest of the body. And it is important because any little cells that are left behind at operation, for example, they can be taken out by these by the radiotherapy, and it certainly does reduce the risk of recurrence, which is important.
Yeah, because I think that's very important for us to say about the survival rates. It says here that around two-thirds, 65% of women diagnosed with breast cancer in England and Wales survive their disease for 20 years or more.
Yeah, which is fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So and that number is going up all the time. I mean, 20 years ago, when the treatments weren't so good, it would have been much lower. So,
yeah,
you know, there is massive amount of hope for people with breast cancer, well, any cancer, but specifically breast cancer.
Brilliant. So, you know, like you said, people go through earlier all those different stages of emotion, but you know, if you research a lot, there's a lot of positive messages out there about breast cancer and other cancers as well.
Definitely.
We're going to go to another poem, and when we come back, we're going to talk about when you finish treatment. This is another fantastic poem by another lady who's experienced cancer for a family member. So touching, and it's called "The Things Cancer Will Never Take From You," and her name is Aaliyah Pierce.
Remember me as I am. Remember to speak of me in one life, to not separate my name into before and after. Remember me in spirit, for the body withers and the maggots will always come to feast. Remember me as a fighter, a beacon of light shining at the end of the tunnel. Remember me as a body built of stories. Remember me for being messy, for doing and being curious, for tasting every ounce of this pain, for wondering for the fifth time today, am I going to die? Because all of those things tell me that I felt, that I lived this life for you and you and you and you. We cannot live this life only for ourselves. Remember me as a part of you. Remember me for leaving you with story in your bones. Remember me for all that I have done when I was here. Not for how I did not look like myself anymore. Not for how I needed you in more ways than you signed up for. Not for how some days this chemo took my faith for itself. I want to curse the air for its greed, for taking my last breath. But cancer has no justice. No sympathy for its host, no comprehension of love in its finest hour. It tries to eat the pretty things within us, tries to take the pretty things within us, tries to take what isn't theirs, like loved ones, like limbs, like his hair. Daddy, why is he losing his hair? Tries to take the laughter exploding from his belly, tries to take his stories, because cancer knows that our stories are the synapses that will forever connect you and me. These stories have magic beneath their seams. We need to remember our stories, to tell our stories of when the warriors have gone to battle and the war was fought and lost. Of when the ships sailing west sink beneath the deepest, darkest secrets of the sea and the pirates return home empty-handed. These stories are the best moments and the worst moments of our lives, living and breathing as one. They are the before and after, taken for granted and swelled with regret because it is far too late. They are the simple and the heartbreaking, the profound and the mundane. They have no perfect ending and no rhyme. I miss him. I miss my uncle. And I did not yell, I love you from the mountaintop. I did not say goodbye, for I feared it would be our last. We both knew it would be our last. But I now understand that the body withers and the maggots will always come to feast. But cancer will never be able to take away our memories, our jokes, the fact that I had the opportunity to see and feel and breathe in such a man. The fact that you did not vomit today, the fact that you were able to read today, the fact that you ate a cheeseburger and fries today, the fact that you went outside today. You went 20 minutes without thinking about cancer today. Today you danced. You were able to walk amongst the sun and all the pretty things this earth birthed. cancer will never be able to take away your before and after, because my uncle may have passed, but I see him every time my cousin smiles, hear him every time his son laughs, feel him every time his sister and brothers walk into a room. His death reminds me of how much he has lived. Cancer. Cancer will never be able to take away anything. I know he is seated at the right hand of the table, next to his wife as they drown into each other's ears. This will be our last supper, and we will mount this memory on the walls and tell the world what magnificence occurred in this room tonight. Thank you.
Wow. What an absolutely amazing poem. And you know what I loved about that is when she talks about our stories. Mm. We all have stories, and we're here to share our stories, our experiences. And that's what you've done right here. So we are in the studio with Dr. Kathleen Thompson, author of From Both Ends of the Stethoscope, Getting Through Breast Cancer by a Doctor Who Knows. One of the things I didn't ask you, you know, you're talking about getting through breast cancer in your book, but can this book help other cancers as well? Other cancer
Definitely.
Patients?
I would say even any serious illness, because it's showing you how to get through the system. I mean, as I say, breast cancer treatment is changing all the time, so I didn't want to just focus in on that because it would be outdated within a couple of years. But it's really, how do you deal with it yourself? How do you get through the system? How do you educate yourself and understand all the information out there? And how do you give yourself the best chance of it not coming back as well?
Yes, we're going to talk about that. Finishing treatment.
Yeah.
So, you know, they call it, explain remission, because I hear people say that, but to me, it's just the word. What does it actually mean?
To be honest, I agree with you. It is just a word. And it's a slightly confusing word, really. I mean, I think if we understand, as we were discussing earlier, that everybody has cancer cells in the body all the time, but most of the time we get rid of them, just like everybody's exposed to coughs and colds all the time, but we don't usually succumb and die to that either. And so, you know, people talk about remission, they talk about all sorts of things, and it's possibly more relevant to some cancers than others, but people used to talk about the 5 years, you know, like 5 years is the magical time, and if you've gone 5 years without having a cancer, then you're regarded as cured. But it's kind of slightly meaningless, because nowadays some people live with cancer, and they live for many years with cancer, and yes, they might need treatment, but they are living, you know, good lives. So I think it's wrong to kind of almost think of cancer as being that kind of guy in the black cloak with the sickle in his arm, you know, sort of hanging over your shoulder, because it's an illness, and it can be a chronic illness, just like diabetes or anything else. Obviously, it's nice if we don't have it, but, you know, again, we don't know what's going on in our bodies anyway. You know, there might be something there. With breast cancer specifically, the first time you get it, there is a good chance of cure. If it comes back again, and sadly it does in many women and some men, because men do get breast cancer as well, men do have breast tissue, then at the moment it is regarded as incurable. And I actually have many friends who have secondary breast cancer, as they call it. Mm-hmm. But again, many of them are surviving and doing well with it. And there are things that you can do to help the balance. It's nobody's fault if you get cancer. There are certain factors which we can do nothing about, our genes. Some people are just more prone to it than others. But there are certain things we can do to help ourselves. So the evidence shows that being overweight makes you more prone to breast cancer. If you eat all the wrong kind of foods, by that I mean processed foods, if you don't eat enough fresh fruits and vegetables, if you drink too much alcohol, these are all things which kind of stack the odds against you. Now I'm not saying that you should live like a monk, you know, and Just eat sort of fresh fruit and vegetables and nothing else, and drink water. And even then, you know, if you've got the wrong genes, you might still get cancer. So, yeah. As I say, it's nobody's fault if they get cancer. But if you think of it as the straw that broke the camel's back, if you reduce the number of straws in any ways you can, you're giving yourself the best chance of either not getting it in the first place, or if it does come, not getting it again. So by all means, have a glass of wine, but try to limit the amount of alcohol you have. Really try and have lots of proper fresh fruit and vegetables. They all contain lots of micronutrients, which are what our immune system needs to work. Mm-hmm. And it is our immune system which is every day protecting us from cancer.
Right.
So if you can feed your army of immune cells, you've got a better chance of surviving. You know, smoking is generally regarded as not great because it does cause lots of different cancers. Being overweight is not great. And the reason for that is that a lot of breast cancers are stimulated by the female hormone estrogen. And as you get older particularly, a lot of estrogen is stored actually within your fat tissue. So if you've got more fat tissue, you've got a reservoir of estrogen. So there's various scientific reasons, but really if you just try and lead a healthy lifestyle, eat properly, and the other big thing is exercise. There's certainly been a lot of trials which have shown that exercise and being fit, healthy, does prevent your cancer. So again, it's things we can do to help ourselves. If it does come back despite that, it's not anything you've done wrong, it's just, you know, the luck of the draw. But why not give yourself the best chance, really?
So if you finish treatment, taking a look at your diet, exercise, and when we say exercise, you don't have to go on the treadmill in the gym for 2 hours. There's so many different types of forms of exercise that you can use. One of the things I liked what you said is about working on your mind as well. So meditation, I think that that's a great idea in terms of exercising your mind. I think that's a really good one, because you've gone through something very traumatic, but your life is going on, is still here, you're still here. So it's about getting that balance in your mind of what, where you want your life to go and what you want to achieve while you're still here as well. And meditating can help you focus on that and not focus so much on the fact that you've just recovered from an illness. Oh, thank you so much for that. It's been a fantastic show.
I've loved it, Tracy. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a real pleasure.
You know, some really fantastic information we've had on the show today, and I know that cancer can be a very sore topic or a difficult topic for many of us to talk about, but the more we talk about it, the more we help and support each other and those who are being diagnosed, to help them to hopefully get to a place of where they're in remission and they're able to continue on their own life journeys and then share their stories to inspire other people. And that's exactly what Dr. Kathleen Thompson's doing with her book, From Both Ends of the Stethoscope, Getting Through Breast Cancer by a Doctor Who Knows. So, you know, even doctors get ill.
Absolutely.